Hello and welcome to Distillations, weekly extracts from the past, present, and future of chemistry. I'm Robert Hicks. Each week we bring you stories on all things chemical, from lucite to lightsabers. In this week's show, we're talking about blockbuster science, how the science of fiction grows from the science of real-life labs. We'll reminisce about a genetically engineered cartoon supervillain and visit an interactive Star Wars exhibit that brings the movie to the museum. On today's episode of Distillations. Science fiction classics like Star Wars, Star Trek, and Superman have drawn enthusiastic readers and viewers for decades. Whether it's in the movies, in comic books, or on TV, science fiction depends on science. Today we're looking at the relationship between science on the silver screen and science in real life. First up, we'll hear about an element you may associate with bringing a classic superhero to his knees. Jennifer Dionisio has the true story in today's Element of the Week.
The element krypton, Greek for hidden, was first isolated in 1898 by Sir William Ramsay and Morris Travers. Krypton is a member of the noble gas family, which also includes helium, neon, and radon. Like the other inert gases, krypton has limited chemical utility, but it's a popular component in fluorescent lights and photographic bulbs because of the bright white light it emits when ignited. Krypton may play a small role in the chemical world, but it's a major player in the world of science fiction, as the home of Superman and the one element that can destroy the Man of Steel. Okay, right, that's kryptonite, the green mineral, not krypton. But they must be related, right? Well, if you can believe one unverified posting on Wikipedia, it's either an oxyanion of krypton, which, as the author notes, is impossible for a noble gas like krypton, or it's a reference to a meteorite from the planet Krypton. Another theory says it's the mineral ore of kryptonium, a fictional element with an atomic number of 126. We might spend the better part of a day waxing chemical about how krypton and kryptonite relate, but we're probably better off acknowledging the more likely truth. It just sounds kind of cool. And that's it for the Element of the Week. I'm Jennifer Dionisio.
Movies like Jurassic Park, Outbreak, and more recently, I Am Legend, show us what happens when science goes awry. And silly as it may sound, this can put scientists on the defensive, scrambling to protect their public image. This is especially true when dealing with emerging technosciences like genetic engineering, stem cells, and all things nano. CHF's Jody Roberts has this commentary on his unlikely introduction to some of these topics.
My introduction to genetic engineering didn't come from news stories about Dolly the sheep, pesticide-resistant crops, or any science textbook. It came from G.I. Joe, that real American hero of my childhood afternoons. Here's how it works.
Seems our present leader is worthless. I will create a new one.
To construct the ultimate foe, the evil mastermind, Dr. Mindbender, dreams up a plan to use the DNA from history's most gifted and notorious leaders.
The military brilliance of Napoleon, the ferocity of Genghis Khan, the leadership of Alexander.
Adventure and conflict ensue as G.I. Joe learns of the plan and attempts to thwart it. What's so fascinating about this tale is not just the construction, or perhaps birth, of Serpentor, the new Cobra leader, but how the writers of the show work through the complexities of the still-budding area of technoscience. Keep in mind, this episode originally aired in 1986, almost a decade before Jurassic Park hit the theaters. Serpentor lived a tortured and schizophrenic life, plagued by the voices of the original owners of his DNA. The episode presented questions for my young mind. What is the relationship of the soul and self to DNA? What sorts of monsters might we be creating, intentionally and accidentally? With this experience ingrained in my memory, I was fascinated, but not totally surprised, to see a clip from one of the most recent incarnations of Spider-Man, Spider-Man Unlimited, on Fox Kids. Just listen.
Guess it's time for the world to get acquainted with the all-new, all-improved Spider-Man. This year's fully loaded model features nanotechnology, discreetly borrowed from the lab of Reed Richards. This scientific marvel features billions of microscopic robots working in harmony to make one spiffy set of duds.
That's right. Spider-Man's new outfit is constructed using nanotechnology. Watching this scene got me thinking about the history of Spider-Man and the source of his powers. In the early days, Peter Parker was bitten by a spider that had been exposed to radiation. If you fast forward to the recent box office versions, we see young Peter bitten not by a radiated spider, but one genetically engineered to possess all the best properties of other spiders, DNA science at its malicious best. Cartoon, comic, and movie characters like Spider-Man and Serpentor reflect a long-standing public curiosity and fear about emerging sciences. But the critics who fear spreading supposedly false images of science fail to appreciate the complex relationship between science as seen by the scientists and science as it lives in our culture. Science in the lab, in comics and books, and on the screen is a part of our culture, and science fiction will always find ways to depict both our fears and our hopes. I'm Jody Roberts for Distillations.
He'll fight for freedom wherever there's trouble. G.I. Joe is there. G.I. Joe.
Jody Roberts is not just a cartoon buff. He's also program manager for environmental history and policy in the Center for Contemporary History and Policy at the Chemical Heritage Foundation. For links to some of our favorite Spider-Man episodes, check out our website at distillations.chemheritage.org. You're listening to Distillations. I'm Robert Hicks. Science museums have caught on to the public's fascination with Hollywood science, using the science of the movies as a way to draw record crowds and, hopefully, a way to teach. A crew from CHF checked out one of these exhibits on the science of Star Wars at the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia.
I'm Audra Wolf. I'm the executive producer for Distillations.
I'm Jen Landry. I'm head of collections at the Chemical Heritage Foundation.
And I am the host for Distillations, Robert Hicks.
Okay, so we're at the Franklin Institute seeing the exhibit Star Wars, Where Science Meets Imagination. And this is a traveling exhibit that came to the Franklin only a couple weeks ago, and it's very busy here today, as you can hear by the noise. And the intent of the exhibit is to showcase some of the original artifacts and objects from all six films, and to look at the connects between modern science and technology and what can be achieved in the future with what we see in the movies. So let's see what we've got here in this exhibit. So here we're looking at a very wired, mangled-looking C-3PO without his famous gold outer shell. And this is from Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, when we first meet C-3PO and realize that he was actually built by Anakin, who would become Darth Vader. What we're looking at now is Luke Skywalker's land speeder in Episode 4, A New Hope. So it was one of the earliest vehicles you actually see in the first 1977 movie. And it levitated, and so they're trying to tie in what we saw in the movie of these vehicles that could sort of pilot themselves over land without actually touching land with whether that could be possible in our world today.
And if you turn around, there's an exhibit about maglev in the real world. So it's kind of a funny thing. You're using fiction as a jumping off point to talk about science, but the fiction in the movie isn't really made that way. It's made with a different kind of special effects.
A section that's talking about living on Hoth, and of course those that remember the movies remember Hoth was a very cold planet, and now on the other side we're looking at an outfit for being on one of the coldest places on the planet Earth. It's a red parka and some very thick gloves and what look like super lined boots, and they're discussing what it takes to be in Antarctica.
Why don't we check out medicine? I see Star Wars medicine. We see a prosthetic hand that was Luke Skywalker's.
And interestingly, in addition to Luke's hand, we're seeing what was Anakin's prosthetic hand. It was his first mechanical body part attached before he became Darth Vader.
Now we're looking at an exhibit of actual prosthetic devices.
That's right. So now they're trying to contrast with the sort of Star Wars fantasy of artificial limbs. And then in the corner here, we see a full-blown Darth Vader costume, which was basically a way for artificial life support of what was left of Anakin.
There's something else around the corner. Let's see what this is.
The Darth Vader mask dissected.
This breakdown of masks that we're looking at is actually from the 2005 movie, whereas the other costume is from 1977. And it'd be interesting if they would have actually talked about, did they change it? I mean, it looks like these actually have some sort of computer microchips on them, and I'm sure that they didn't exist in 1977, particularly in this small size.
It occurs to me we have not yet found the signature item, the lightsaber, the weaponry,
that's
but I think
true.
I see the exhibit over here.
Here it is, the Holy Grail of a Star Wars exhibit, lightsabers.
It says, in quotes, an elegant weapon for a more civilized age. And contrasting above that is some older, what they call ancient weapons, are no match for a good blaster at your side. And they sort of look like a primitive, maybe World War II era weapons.
Well, Jen, we've seen the exhibit. What's your overall impression of this?
I think as a sort of overall exhibit about Star Wars, it's really interesting for the Star Wars fan to come and get to see some of these real models and objects from the actual exhibit, and that's really exciting for people to see. I think the connects with the science takes a little more work, but it's there, and I think it's interesting that they're contrasting sort of what we see in the movie and what could possibly happen in either now or in the future, and is it possible through science?
All right, over and out from the Franklin Institute for Distillations.
Star Wars is at the Franklin Institute in Philadelphia until May 4th, 2008. The traveling show has one final exhibition at the Science Museum of Minnesota in St. Paul from June to October. And that's it for this week's episode of Distillations. Today's quotation comes from none other than Superman's nemesis, Lex Luthor. Some people can read War and Peace and come away thinking it's a simple adventure story. Others can read the ingredients on a chewing gum wrapper and unlock the secrets of the universe. Distillations is a presentation of the Chemical Heritage Foundation and is made possible by the generous support of the Richard Lounsbery Foundation. Mia Lobel is our senior producer. Our assistant producer is Victoria Indeviro, and our executive producer is Audra Wolf. Our theme music is composed and performed by Dave Kaufman. Please tell us what you think about our program and send suggestions for future shows to distillations@chemheritage.org. Until next time, I'm Robert Hicks.